got a question, right, man? Question is like this. That when Hashem tells Avram that he's going to destroy Sodom, so Avram argues with him. You know, he says, well, if there's 50 tzaddikim, will you destroy the wicked with the good with the wicked?
Right.
40, 30, 20, goes down in numbers.
Right.
But Avram's whole argument is, I think that somehow, the schus of these people should save Sodom.
Right.
But what happens? Really, only Lot and his wife, in the end, are worthy of being saved.
Right.
So Hashem sends Malachim to go and save Avram and Lot. So let's say that...
Not Avram, just Lot.
Sorry, Lot and his wife, sorry. So let's say there were 50 people who were tzaddikim. So then the logical thing would be that since we know...
Once again, slow down, I'm talking to the phone, so I can tell you.
Anyway, so the logical thing would be, so if there's 50 tzaddikim, so we already know that the society is evil and it has to be destroyed.
So that there's a what?
We already know that the society there is evil and has to be destroyed. So if there's 50 tzaddikim, send 50 malachim, or whatever it is, you know, and bring out those tzaddikim. In other words, why is it that, you know, they're going to save the whole city? It's like schus is like a mystical thing, and, you know, if you have enough schus, if you calculate up the schus and there's enough of it, so then somehow, like, whatever, the Gzara Din is not going to happen. I mean, we see, like, by Ninveh, the whole city had to do tshuva.
That's a good question. What you just said now is a good question.
Isn't it the same question?
Well, I mean, up till now, I'm not so sure. Yeah, it was good. No, I'm not saying it wasn't a good question.
But isn't it one question?
No, but this is a better question. Why is it a better question? Because in the first instance, okay, good point, you're asking a question, but there's no real... It's because we don't know enough. But there's no inherent contradiction. It's always stronger if you decide a different case. I'm just, I'm always trying to point out methodology. That, let me say it over as I understand it. That I think the question is that Abraham is pleading, you know, for Sodom and Gomorrah based upon the fact that there may be a certain amount of righteous people. So it goes up to 50. And goes down to 10. Apparently that's the cutoff point, even though we don't really understand, but that's the cutoff point. And the question is, what's the argument? Essentially, if the argument is that God will kill the Hamas Tzadik and Rasha, that God will kill the Tzadikim together with the Rishayim, then there's a simple solution. Kill the Rishayim and save the Tzadikim. That does not seem to be the case, because if that's all Abraham wanted, then he should have just focused on the tzaddikim. Then you don't have to go through the numbers. What difference does it make? If the argument is merely to save the tzaddikim, which makes sense, why should they be destroyed? So then you focus on the tzaddikim, and then the numbers don't make any difference. That's correct, right?
Yeah.
So on the other hand, well, why should the Rishayim be spared from their punishment because of the tzaddikim? Why does one thing have to do with the other? Why is that, Mishpat? His whole argument seems to be based upon Mishpat. So Mishpat would be, even though it's founded on Mishpat, but the way he actually, you know, argues it doesn't come down to Mishpat, because he's not saying save the tzaddikim. He's not saying that. That was a Mishpat. He's saying save the Rishayim. So why is that Mishpat? Okay, good question. However, the second part of the question would be, even if we should work out some kind of an idea that there's a certain merit over there and the existence of the tzaddikim reflects on the whole city and so on and so forth, then you have the issue of the case of Ninveh. That Ninveh, we see differently. We do see that Mishpat, of course, you always see Mishpat, and we see a city which was marked for destruction. They were Rishayim. And there... You see the phenomenon of God's rachamim, but the rachamim was only after they repented, because it seems clear that there wasn't a matter of 10, there was no issue over there. I mean, it's an interesting phenomenon also. You could go further and say, was Yonah, we're not saying that Yonah was on the level of Abraham, but he was a Navi, and he doesn't seem to take the same approach as Abraham. Abraham prayed, argued for them. Yonah didn't even want to bother with them. He wanted them to be destroyed. And he was basically coerced into going there. But, all right, that's a good question. But your question is that even the case of Minveh is one which we understand, because that's God's Rachmanis, even though they were deserving of destruction. So there's nothing that says Mishpat doesn't really demand that you have to give them another chance. But nevertheless, God gave them another chance. However, even after giving them a chance, it was dependent upon the fact that they were basically all the tshuva. So if that's the case, why should Sodom and Gomorrah be different? That would seem to be more of a contradiction. Okay? Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah.
Guys?
Yeah.
All right, that's good. Let's take that up.
All right.
Any approaches? I like the comparison with Nineveh. I hadn't heard that before. That's new. The association to Nineveh. It's very interesting. But we'll see as far as whatever we can do. If we can't do all of these, if we can't answer all the questions, we'll...
It could just be that factually, by Nineveh...
Hello?
It could just be that factually the case of Nineveh is different because there weren't any tzaddikim there. So the whole city did have to do tshuva.
The whole city did have to do tshuva because there were no tzaddikim over there.
Yeah, it could be that just, you know, even though Avram was trying to argue that Sodom maybe has 50 tzaddikim, by Nineveh there were zero. I mean, I don't know, that could be factually just the case.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying.
That's why I just think that, you know...
I prefer to go in order, though.
Right, but I mean, even though it's like...
I prefer to go in order.
Well, it's deductive, not great proof.
Hold on, I think let's just see what's going on over here first.
Right.
That's the way to go. What's going on over here, is it true... that Abraham, what's Abraham arguing about over here? If he's arguing, if he's concerned, he should be concerned about the tzaddikim.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is that really true that the tzaddikim will be destroyed?
Mm-hmm.
But he should not be concerned about the Rishayim. Or what, you know, it's just as much mishpat, obviously from an emotional standpoint, it's more appealing to, you know, to want to save everybody, not to destroy. But that's not irrational. What?
You're a Christian.
I can't hear you. What?
If you're Christian, it's more appealing to want to save everyone.
Right, but not to us. We're mishpat oriented. So no, a person who loves mishpat, that's the question. A person who loves mishpat, what's his attitude towards the Rishayim? I mean, Bavod Rishayim Rina. We learned that in the Rambam brings it down in Sanhedrin, and when you intimidate the witnesses. Then, because that's in case there may be a conspiracy, so we want to sober them up. They should realize how serious it is. But then, if there's a concern that we may have scared them too much, and they'll just retract, why bother getting involved, then we tell them that this is the truth, they have to proceed. Because Bavod Rishayim Rina, with the destruction of the wicked, there's a Rina, there's happiness, exaltation.
Well, it could be that Avraham thought that they still had the potential to reach a level of Yedias Hashem.
That's correct. I was going to say that.
Who? So again?
It could be that Avraham thought that they still had the potential to reach a level of Yedias Hashem, so he didn't want them to be destroyed.
So then argue on that basis. Forget about the tzaddikim. Why are you mixing up two separate issues? Then maybe they're not that bad. Maybe with proper influences, they could be changed. Give them time. He doesn't argue that way.
Yeah, that's true, that's true. I mean, you're asking a slightly different question. You're saying, why argue for them at all?
Why what?
You're asking a slightly different question than the one that I asked.
I'm asking on what you just said. I'm not asking a separate question.
Well, no, because the question
I'm responding to what you said.
Right. No, but you are. You're saying, why argue for them at all?
Why should you even argue for them?
Right.
I see what you said. Yeah, I mean, to begin with. That's a good question, too.
Right.
Why isn't he just accepted?
Right.
If God says that they're a Rishayim, that's a good point. It's a very obvious question. See, the problem, you see, people don't ask those questions because we're so ingrained with the idea that this is the greatness of Avraham. So you sort of take that for granted. But,
Yeah. Your idea, you mean that everyone can be...
I mean, what would you do? What would you do? What would I do if God would reveal?
You mean we're in agreement with the idea that every life has value?
Yeah.
The false idea.
Right, if God were to reveal that he's going to destroy Germany for what they did in the 40s.
Yeah, like every year, that there'd be a reason to save
them. So he's going to start arguing that you shouldn't do it.
It's like a bizarre.
What?
Yeah, it's like you can't say that every life has value.
Right.
It's a false Christian idea.
I mean, that's a very strong question. Again, what I like about it is that it's very simple question, but it seems most people skip over that. I mean, I like that. We should remove all preconceptions and not be afraid to ask the most basic questions. This kind of question would draw a response. If you're in an audience, like you went to a class on Shabbos or some shul, you know, like, why did I ever even bother to pray?
You got a sermon.
I'm sorry. Most people, I think, would look at you like funny, like, well, what's wrong with you? Of course you're supposed to pray for them. That's what tzaddikim do. But I agree. I think it's a good question. I like that question.
You gave material for Shabbos.
What?
Yosef gave you material for Shabbos in the morning.
Well, that's why I have this here, actually.
It's a prep.
Does this stuff really make it to Shabbos morning?
It's a selfish phenomenon. What?
Does this stuff really make it to Shabbos morning? I'm just curious.
It might. I mean, a lot of times it does.
Oh, wow.
A lot of times it does. More of this type, so far, this type is more for the... I give a Dvar Torah in the morning, which is a different type of a thing. It's more of a presentation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's based upon... It's not like a discussion up and back. This type of thing, but then I give a class in the afternoon on the Sedra. So this type of an exposition, I mean, I'll see. Definitely the questions that have been raised are good. I just have to see how far we get. Okay, I like that question too. Like, why did Abraham start praying for them? God says, let's take a look at the parasha here. God said he's going to reveal to Abraham this whole thing. All these things. So what does that have to do with it? I mean, I can't. I'm just raising some of the questions that pertain to the story. It's a fascinating story. That even... This is in Perek Yichez. Hashem Omar, Hamachas Ani Me Avram, Asher Ani Yosef.
What pasuk are you?
That's Yichez, pasuk Yizayin. This is after the angel, the messengers, depart. And God said, Hamachas Ani Me Avram, Asher Ani Yosef. Shall I cover from Abraham? Shall I not reveal what I'm going to do? That's interesting. And then it says, Abraham Hoyo Yia. Which I got over the Yatam. The Nimichuvo Kobei Yard. He's going to be a powerful nation. And all of the Goyei Haaretz will be blessed through him. What does that do with anything? So what? So that's what we're fine. But what does that have to do with this? Because of that, somehow or other, God is going to reveal what's about to take place. Then, Tiyadachim, Ramana Sheyitzava, as one of the Espeis of Akhara, Vishamu Derech Hashem. All right, briefly, without going into all the nuances, it's a very complicated process in terms of the structure. But basically it means, Tiyadachim, I know him, I have a special hashkacha, relationship with him. And because of the fact that he commands his household, his children and household after him, to guard the Derech Hashem. The way of God, Lasso Sakum Mishpah. And because of that, God will bring upon him everything that he spoke to him about the future and so forth. Okay, I'm not going to go into an analysis. Obviously, you can see yourself the structure of the pasuk is complicated, but that's the basic idea. The basic idea is that it's denoting what is unique about Abraham. That Abraham is a unique individual, in that he's involved not just in the pursuit of the truth and the correct way of life, but above and beyond in a way of passing it on to his children, not just to his children obviously, but it's to the greatest extent possible to create a system which perpetuates these ideas throughout history. Okay, so because of that, he's unique. God relates to him. But because of that, God is going to reveal what's about to happen. There, it's not so clear what the connection is. Okay? I'm just throwing out that question. If anybody has an answer to that, I'm going to be throwing out more questions than we'll answer at this time. But, you know, I like to get all the questions out, then we sort of look for some kind of breakthrough. If it's something positive that I'm overlooking it, let me know. Then God says, Zakastom v'amora ki rabba. The scream of Sodom and Gomorrah is very great. The chatasam and their sins, yichavdom yod, is exceedingly heavy. Okay. Erdona v'era. I will go down and I will see. Akatakasa habo elai asukola. What does that mean? What is that Erdona v'era? I'll go down and I'll see whether the screen that comes to me, that is kolah, kiloyon, that it reflects a degree of corruption, an ultimate kind of a degree of corruption. Interesting. Anyway, I mean, era does not the era.
The Rashi.
Yeah, Rashi says.
That's for our Gemara here.
What Gemara here?
Yeah,
it's relevant. Limeid l'dayanim. It's a lesson, because obviously God doesn't have to come down and see. This is anthropomorphic. We can't take it literally. The implication being that God needs a better look, so to speak. That doesn't have any truth as far as God is concerned, but God depicts himself as acting in a manner which is to teach us ideas. In our framework, there's always two different perceptions. That it's a very important lesson, by the way. It's extremely important. And that is that, you know, we understand that we receive knowledge on an abstract level. We receive a report, you know, you read, and so on and so forth. And it's, you know, you have to base yourself on that information. You come to certain conclusions on the basis of the information. But you should realize that there's always a limitation in that. Because of the human weakness, there's only so much that you can perceive on that basis. But to go down and see for yourself, to get familiar with the particulars, with the context to the greatest extent possible. That's the limud for Dayanim, but it's the limud in life in general. Not to judge, you tend to judge someone purely in the abstract. Yeah, but then you talk to the person and certain new things come out and whatever, that gives you a better picture of the situation. You shouldn't jump to conclusions so quickly. Okay. I mean, it's true like in a lot of things. You know, like you're in America over here, so the situation in Israel. So you're sympathetic to one group, or the settlers, or the other group, or this one. You form opinions, and that's it. They become very rigid. But guaranteed, if you were to go there and spend time with the individuals and learn more of the nuances and particulars, I'm not saying that you would just simply change, but it would certainly have an effect in terms of getting a closer picture of the truth. Here, Rashi is saying, though, it's making a halachic point that they should only paskin din nefeshos b'ra'iyah, which means edus, as opposed to circumstantial evidence. But that point, Rakol kashepi Rashi v'parshas haflaga. But Rashi says he's explained this idea in the Zohar HaMaharal haflaga. And Yud Aleph Hey, let me just quickly Yud Aleph Hey. Ayyered Hashem. See that same expression. The expression of Ayyered, of God going down, has a certain meaning. What does Rashi say? The Rashi says, obviously, God didn't have to go down to see. That they should not convict the defendant until they see and understand. Okay. That's the basic idea. Then Rashi over here says, Dabar Acha, Erdo Nova Sof Masehim. Here's another sof mase. It means that God will, you know, God will project the ultimate result of where they're headed to. So, all right. So the basic point is that before the decree, the God, so to speak, is going to look at the case more closely. Okay, the Imlawe Dar. And if not, then I'll know what to do. Basically, what's the shot on that? Ezra says, Arachim Osam. That is to say that if they haven't reached that degree of corruption, then I won't destroy them. Right, I think the first should say that instead I'll punish them. Because there's two different approaches. That is to say like this. It doesn't make sense to say that in low, I'll let them go free. That also doesn't make sense. But it's clear at this point in time that they're extremely wicked. So God is judging whether they deserve to live or whether they have to be destroyed. That's a very serious decision. This is very important in understanding what takes place later. But this is a different kind of a decision. The decision to utterly destroy something. That's, you see by the Dharmabal, the whole development over there. It's not just simply God, they do some evil, God destroys them. It doesn't work that way. There's a build-up. If you study carefully the end of Bereshit and the beginning of Noach, the different stages in the development of the evil, and then first it breaks out, then there's a tremendous spread. Then even that, it fills up the entire world. You see that it's a very big decision. So over here, when it says the Imlo, if it's not the case, if they don't warrant destruction, so then Eidah means, I mean, they'll be rachamim, that he won't destroy them, obviously, but they'll be punished. So there's a certain point at which a person is still within the framework of Chav Yonesh, that he deserves an Onesh. And the Onesh is really intended for his benefit. But then there's a point beyond that where the out of that framework, and now he warrants destruction. Okay? Then Avram comes into the picture. But you guys have Layoma, Aptis Batadik in Russia. Will you kill the tzaddik together with the Russia? Okay. It seems to be fluctuating between different points. The first point is, would you kill the tzaddik with the Russia? Which seems to be, okay, kill the Russia, but why should the tzaddik die? Then you have the next thing doesn't seem to flow. Then the argument is that because of the tzaddikim, you shouldn't kill the Rishayim. That's the problem over here. That's the ambivalence. Okay. Now, let's pause for a minute. So let's deal with does any thoughts on the first question as to why did he get involved in this whole thing? Why didn't you just accept the fact that they're a shame? If they're a shame, God's going to destroy them. So what's wrong with that?
Can we have a second to think about it?
I'm sorry?
Can we have a second to think about it?
Sure, no problem.
Okay. Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah, just give me about a minute. What's up? Good.
It seems like Abraham got involved because he viewed Hashem's action to destroy Sodom as unjust.
Right.
He called it Chalila. So he...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It seems like Abraham got involved because he views Hashem's action to kill Sodom as unjust. It's Chalila, he calls it. And like a few pesukim later.
Chalila, okay.
But why is it unjust? What's his argument?
And Rashi says it's not, he's not calling it unjust, he's saying the people will call it unjust. He said this is his umnas, this is his umnas. He just destroyed Sadiqim with Rishayim like he did with the Mabul and Barakola.
Can we see the people? I have a possibility right now.
Oh,
okay. Okay.
First, you have to respond. He did something. Hey, you're right. Somebody mentioned Chalil Rechav, Chuvin Ulach. That's by Chol. That's, hello?
Yeah.
That's lacking in, you know, Kedusha. That's Chol. Yomru Kachum Nato. They'll say that's the nature of God. Shotei Fakol. He just wipes everything out. That's Dikim Roshayim. Tachas Isha Lodar Amavo. Lodar Aflaga. Interesting.
Find something similar to that by Moshe, and where he talks about the Mitzrayim.
Yeah.
It's Lama Yomru Mitzrayim, I think.
Right. Well, that's a different thing. Oh, you go away. It goes back to Dharma Abel?
No, that just what other people will say when.
Yeah. But they're right. They're more specific. That God failed. They don't say God failed.
Right.
But God couldn't do it, so he killed them. Yeah, it's true. So that'll be a Chilul Hashem. Here's. True, it's the same idea that if people, you're right, I think it's the same idea, that it'll be a Chilul Hashem, because they'll say he just wipes everybody out. That's a little bit different than the Mishpat argument, because if it's a matter of Mishpat, then you don't need that argument, what people will say. You follow?
Yeah, but it seems like his goal is really to save them.
Right, his goal is to save them. Okay, let me hear what you have to say, Yosef.
My possibility is maybe that there's such a thing just because a person is chai of Misa, you know, for something that he did, doesn't like for being, you know, for being wicked or over the Varazara, it doesn't mean that he can't ever change his ways. It just means that the way he is now, he's chai of Misa. So what Hashem is saying is that because of the way they act right now, they deserve to be destroyed. But Avraham is looking at it from a different framework. He's saying that's true, but still, ultimately, they could be brought to do tshuva, and they could and then they could realize true ideas, and then they will be able to live.
Yeah, but so, that could be said anytime you want to destroy a Russia.
What the discussion is that Hashem is saying that you know, I want to destroy these people, and Avraham maybe is he doesn't want them to be destroyed. He's arguing on their behalf because he feels maybe they could be brought towards truth ultimately. And Hashem is showing him a lesson. He's showing that's true, but there's you see, I'm saying maybe the whole reason Hashem told him in the first place is to tell him something about his justice. And he's telling Avraham it's true that maybe ultimately they could be brought back. But there's still such a thing as Gzar Din, and they're going to die. This is an idea of justice.
I hear you. But there's an idea. So what are you specifically now? What are you explaining why Avram got involved?
Why Avram got involved, yeah.
Why? Again, just sum it up now.
Because he felt that ultimately they could still, even though they're Chai Benisa, ultimately they could still be brought back. So therefore, it would be a loss for them to
die. But that's not what he says. That doesn't fit the argument. The argument, a lot of the arguments seem to be based upon tzaddikim. Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening. I'm listening, so I'm not talking.
He doesn't say that. It doesn't seem from what he's saying that that's the case, unless you connect that to the idea of the tzaddikim. Anyway, let me just start over here with certain ideas. I want to think about this some more. So let's get started. We'll make a start today. If necessary, we can continue with this next week. But I'm thinking of a Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. Anybody have any idea what would be relevant? You know, it wasn't too long ago we were going to Hilchos Tshuva. And
I don't know, the one where for certain people Misa is their only kapara?
No. Perek Gimel.
Where the Rambam talks about,
it's an interesting parak over there.
Is that Nola Man Barakai Tshuva?
No. Why don't you just get a Rambam?
Okay, I'm getting one.
Instead of guessing, you can get out some Rambams if you want. I'm not going to go through the whole Rambam, but just to highlight.
I have to guess which halacha it is. How many halachas are there?
Right.
I only have to
olive.
Guess.
Olive.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
I only have to guess. Right, man. I only have to guess which halacha it is. Perek Gimel. So I have a fewer options now to guess.
There are fewer options, right. But just
thank
basically,
you.
If you take a look at Barry Kimmel, the Rambam goes into this whole discussion of God's judgment in accordance with the sins or merits of a person. It's a very complicated subject.
This is the scale, Perek.
I'm sorry?
This is the scale, Perek.
I don't hear you.
The scale.
What?
He said this is the scale, Perek.
Oh, okay. Just in general, the point that I'm making, I'm not going through all the specifics, it's complicated, and essentially it's correct. It says that God uses a system to judge us. And it shows it has to do with merit and demerit, so to speak, chovos, and there's a shekel, there's a weighing. But it's something which is impossible for a person to understand. Because it's not simplistic. You can't measure one good deed versus other good deeds. It has to do with the quality of the good deed, and one good deed could outweigh many evil deeds, and vice versa. So this shekel is something which is reserved only to the wisdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But what I'm interested in is like this, that either Rambam and Perek in Halacha Beis, Adam Shavonosa Meruvan, Meruvan Al Kriyosav Miyadumei Barisho. Benemar Arov Avancha. This is the Chain Medina. Shavonoseham Aruben. Miyad he obedeth. Benemar Zakasom Ramallah. That's the possibility quote. Down our area. And then the Chain Kol Alam Kulo. Same is true with the entire world. And Hayu Avonoseham Aruben. They Kriyosam Miyad Haim Mishchasim Shinemar Vayar Shem Ki Rabba Raza Adam. So you have three different units over here. But there's a unit of the individual, then you have the Medina, and then you have the world, the entity of the entire world. And then he says, "V'shikul zeh einu l'fi minyan kriyas avonos, elu l'fi godlam." And this weighing is not in accordance with the quantity, but with the quality, so to speak. And then, of course, the ain shoklin elu v'dato shel keil deo. L'ulay yodeh heich orkin has as Kriyos Kenegat Havona. And only God knows how these things are stacked up, how these things are weighed. But what's interesting over here is that there's three different entities, three different objects to which this type of system relates. So that gives us an opening in terms of understanding what's going on over here. Hold on one more second. The Rambam also says in this.
What was the third one? Individual,
the
city,
the world.
He says, so at the end of this. By the way, he does make the point. He makes the point at the end of that parak that he talks about the. They talk about Olam Haba. Hold on, that's something else. That no matter how evil the person was in his life, that nothing stands in the way of tshuva. Yeah, but that's talking about with regard to Olam Haba. So that's something else. Where does the Rambam, where's that famous Rambam where he says that therefore a person should view himself as a Beinuni? He should view himself as a Beinuni. Yeah. That's in Dalit he says that therefore every person should view himself as a Beinuni. Chatzai, half innocent, half guilty. And the same is true, should look at the entire world. And so on and so forth. And therefore that if he did one mitzvah, that one mitzvah could be machriya himself and his medina and the whole world to be saved, since you don't know the nature of the shekel. And the same is true with regard to the sin, that one sin of any individual can have a global effect, so to speak, universal effect. Since we don't know, since there's a reality of judgment based on the kliyos and all of that. Okay? So, the thing over here, I would say, I would say, we'll just say this generally now, tentatively, put out some idea. That, let me just get again, I want to hear one more time. So you're saying, why did Avram intervene? What was the reason?
Me?
Yeah, why did he intervene? Why did he get involved in
the
system?
Yeah, different, his concept was that even though they're Chayav and Misa,
yeah,
but they still, that doesn't mean that they would be incapable of recognizing God. And he was, that was his role, was that was, we know that that was his role, to be Mekadashem Shemayim Avraham, that he was Vayek Rasham, right? So therefore, he wanted a chance to try to bring them back.
Yes, but it's more specific than that. I think that's a good idea. That is to say, we can understand how this plays into the whole role of Avraham.
And then God
But there's also the issue of tying it in to Tiyatatis, the Manasseh Yitzhakah. That was one of the questions we asked, that how is this related to the fact that he's involved in trying to perpetuate the truth.
Right.
That's very, very significant, because that's basically, in terms of his purpose in life, and even in terms of the image that he conveys, although he's not doing it for the sake of an image, but that's what a leader becomes. I mean, if Avraham Avinu becomes a leader, so then exactly what he's doing is, that's really his Avos Hashem. His Avos Hashem is focused upon fulfilling the objective of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the creation, which really has to lead to a true Avos Abriyo. I mean, the whole thing of Vayera is the Avos Abriyo. And if a person does not have a true Avos Abriyo, which is based upon his Avos Hashem, then he really can't succeed in his role. That is to say, there are people at different levels. The people that reach a certain level of personal integrity or tzitzus, perfection in terms of themselves. And they lead a righteous life, and they study Torah, and they try to improve their own soul. But that doesn't make them necessarily a candidate for this role. You see, there were other tzaddikim in the generation. He wasn't the only tzaddik. The whole parsha itself, like you see the beginning, that the third day since his circumcision, and he's waiting by the tent, and the way it's described, because it's also, it's got to study the parsha very carefully, because there's so many things over there that you could ask questions going into all the details of what he served them. The Torah doesn't go into these kinds of details in general, in the menu, and he told us to make cakes, and he went out and he got a nice calf and had it slaughtered and placed it before them and all that. Who cares? I mean, he basically is, he invited them in for hospitality, and that's it. What do I need to know these things? What's the reason for that? That's also a good question.
You
have
a man?
Yeah.
But I wasn't real. It doesn't mean he loves everyone. Slow down.
Yeah, I'm making the point. What the Torah is really describing is a certain degree of Avos Abriyos. What? Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
It's a degree of Avos Abriyos, which is very difficult for us to identify with. It's a different kind of an Avos Abriyos. It's hard for us to identify with it because the Ava that we have is an emotional kind of thing. It's more of an identification kind of a thing. And there's a certain element of enjoyment that we get involved. I once I made the point, if you compare, you see that Lot also was a tremendous Baal Chesed. He learned that from Avraham. But if you read the Sukkim very carefully over there, you'll see an interesting difference. It says, by Avraham, it says, the Avraham Omed Aleihem, that he was involved in all the preparations, and he stood over them like he was the waiter, just waiting upon them. A tremendous amount of involvement, personal involvement. But generally, most people, and now he had servants, he didn't have to do this. By Lot, it says that Vayas Lahem Mishta, Umatos Ofa Vayochelu. Vayas Lahem Mishta, he made a party for them. By Avram, they made a party. And I wanted to differentiate that Lot was a tremendous Baal Chesed. But it wasn't on the same. It didn't partake of the same character of Avraham. Because in Lot, it still partook of a certain emotional gratification. So sometimes you invite people, you have them over, and you make a party. Essentially, you're making it for them, but once it's a party, you partake. You get a certain gratification. That's a party. Avram didn't make a party. Who all made Aleihem? He did not. He wasn't involved for any kind of a self gratification. It was purely an expression of his avas abriyah. There was a different kind of avas abriyah, and that's why I think it all ties together. That's why God says that the Avram Hayoyia, because he commands after him, which means to say that he's not just focused on his own personal existence or just on his children, but for all mankind forever. That's the ultimate abstract avas abrios, because of the fact that the brios have a significance in the Pharaoh of Kadosh Baruch Hu. So it's part of his avas Hashem. See, so it's that factor which God tells him what he's going to do, and then Avram, because of his avas abrios, is going to explore every aspect. Of course, it has to be in the framework of Mishpat. He's not throwing aside Mishpat. But it's only because of his avas abrios that he's motivated to get involved in this discussion and to be mispalel, to do whatever he can to say it. Because that's the hallmark. Another person that doesn't have that degree of avas abrios is going to look at it differently. That is, okay, if they're good people, so why are you going to kill them? They're ashamed. So if they're ashamed, so what? I mean, God knows what's best. That's the reason why he got involved. And the way God communicated it to him, indeed, it did leave a window, it seems, because God said, "Heirs are not the era," that they're very, they're wicked. But the implication is that the Gezeirah Din wasn't complete yet. If the Gezeirah Din was complete, it's a different story. Then the issue is, so maybe they could do tshuva. It's a different picture. Here he's not doing that. Here he's still as someone who's involved, so to speak, in the Masu Mata. He's, the terminology of Sanhedrin. He's still arguing for the defense. But you see over here that it's different, because we've established that there's a different way of judging the yachid, the individual, and there's a different way of judging the medina. Here it's the medina. So here I would say that there are two elements that he's involved in. One, what he's isolating is that Hashofet Kol Haaretz Lo Yaaseh Mishpat. And One aspect is, what about the tzaddikim? And it could be, also we can assume that he had a knowledge of the place. Avram, it makes sense to assume that he was aware. He was aware of the city and all that. I mean, Lot was aware. Lot went there. So why should we assume that Avram didn't know about the character of the place? He knew that there was great evil. But there's a good chance that there's tzaddikim. Because otherwise, why bring it up? If it's so clear that there can't be any tzaddikim there, why even bring it up? So, there's two ideas over here. One would be, if you proceed, now bear in mind that we're talking now not about individuals. He can't deal just with individuals, because if God issued a decree against an individual, then that would be a different case. Here, the Gezeirah Din is against the Medina, and that's a different phenomenon. So it would seem that really, in order to you have to work within the framework of the justice that applies to a Medina. And there are two arguments over here against the destruction of the Medina. Because if you destroy the Medina, but then you're going to destroy the Tzaddikim too. So that's an injustice. Why should the Tzaddikim be caught up? Now, sometimes tzaddikim will be caught up. I mean, that's a different, you don't know. But I mean, but God could decide that they deserve to be because they weren't mochiach the door, whatever the case may be. But that's his argument. The argument is, and I mean, the point of Chaliulacha is also bringing in that factor of Kiddush Hashem. So it's on two different levels. One level is your mishpat. Where's the mishpat? That's the primary argument. Hashofet Kol Haaretz. He's also bringing in the factor, though, that in terms of the ultimate objective, that the world should come to a recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but then there's the chulin. It appears like it doesn't make any difference. There's no justice in the world. That is similar to the argument of Moshe, Lam Riyam Mitzrayim. So both elements are present. On the other hand, you see, there's another point. So that explains the argument of the tzaddikim. Why should they die? Now, as far as the fact that you'll say, but tzaddikim will be saved anyway, because they're tzaddikim, that's not necessarily the case. Because there's a statement of Chazal that when once the sword is given Rishus, Eino Mafkin Bein Tov L'Ra. That is to say, we can assume that even in the Dharma-mapa, it doesn't mean every individual was wicked. But it means to say that God looks at the society as a whole and makes a determination about the society. Once the determination is made, then God decrees certain forces will bring about destruction, and Eino Machzeh Mein Tov L'Ra. I know you're going to say, well, what about Noah? Yeah, well, that's different because Noah's Motzachein. So if an individual is on the level of Ashtacha, which is a very, very high level, if God makes a separate decision about him and isolates him, that's something else. But that doesn't mean that all the good people, there were good people that were killed in the Holocaust. There were people that were saved. We don't know the specifics. We don't know the secrets. But once a decree is given, if a person is there, it's not necessarily to be assumed that he'll be saved, because that would require a separate Ashtacha that relates specifically to him.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't understand. If it's because of Avas of Rios that he's arguing,
yeah.
So, but he's arguing for the Rishayim. He's saying that really the Rishayim should be saved.
One second. Hold it a second. I didn't get to that point.
Oh, okay. All right.
Just give me another minute.
Oh, okay.
Another aspect is that, let's say there's 50, let's say the entire city because of them. You see? That ties in, I think, with what Yosef was alluding to, meaning to say that that's a factor, that since you're not dealing with, Rashi has it that there's 10 in each cross, that there's a tzibur, there's a min, there's a group. But Rashi has it, it makes a lot of sense why 10. Because 10 represents a tzibur, 10 represents a group. So as long as this society is capable of producing a group of people that are tzaddikim, so that would indicate that it has not reached that degree of evil. Where it's, the society has to be uprooted. Because now you're not, now what about those individual Rishayim? That's different. We're not talking about that. He's not arguing about that. Then, you know, let's take America. Well, America's a good country, but let's take other societies. That you have many Rishayim.
Yeah,
many Rishayim. But, see, man, we're not talking, we're not getting involved, but God may judge the Rishayim. God may destroy the Rishayim, but that, we're talking about a decision to obliterate a whole society, a whole civilization. He's arguing that no. How can you say that this is an evil society when it produces, sustains such a group of tzaddikim? Then he's starting to explore. I mean, you have Rashi go, how he goes from 10 to 40 and so on and so forth. I mean, of course, the Rashi, you know, there's 5 krachim over there. You know, but that's something else. But that would explain both aspects, that there are two reasons that he's putting forward why the society should not be destroyed. Because first of all, if that's the case, then the tzaddikim will be wiped out. Just because they're part of a society which is wicked. So where's the mishpat in that? Well, why? A person's a tzaddik, because he happens to live in an evil society, why should he be wiped out? That's one. And the secondary issue over there is the chulin. That the people will perceive that there's no justice. Then, on the other side of the coin, tzaddikim should save the whole city. Because why should it be uprooted? It hasn't reached that ultimate degree of evil. That ultimate degree would mean that's it, that's hopeless. But what do you mean? It produces tzaddikim. So leave the society exist, and maybe these tzaddikim will influence, eventually they'll be stronger. And in terms of the, he's not arguing that every Russia should be saved. That's something else. Those are showing that need to be killed, kill them. But why would you uproot the society? So it has to do with Avraham's desire to get a deeper understanding of God's ways of justice in terms of a society. Okay, now you can ask.
Oh, so he's saying, how wicked are they that they deserve to be destroyed? He's really asking.
Right. That's so he's saying, not quite clear. But he's going beyond that, and he's saying that you find evidence of tzaddikim. So how evil could this society be? If it was that evil, he was in Nazi Germany, you're not going to find tzaddikim. You see?
So he's trying to understand God's justice.
Yes, he's trying to understand God's justice.
How wicked they have to be.
Exactly. Now, if we've gotten this far, let's see if we can deal with the Ninveh question. That is to say, the question by Ninveh, here it would seem that Avram, by the way, Avram was vindicated because God agreed. He didn't go past 10. That's interesting. Yeah, that also proves something. You see, he didn't go past 10.
There's no influence.
Yeah, because apparently there's no real, let's just isolate and defeat him.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I would tell it this, that apparently, in general, the beyond the low 10, it doesn't reflect on the society. It's not. It means that there are certain people that are completely, you know, nonconformist, separate, in spite of the society. In spite of the society, they separate themselves mentally from the society. But it's not. They're not a part of the society. You have to have a certain amount, so you can say that it has some kind of a bearing on the society, and it's a reflection of the society. All right. So what about Ninveh? Good point. By Ninveh, there was no issue of tzaddikim and so on and so forth.
Can you say that since there were no tzaddikim, there was originally a gzar din, and that's why everybody needed to do tshuva in order to change the status of the Medina?
In Ninveh?
Yeah.
I would say that Ninveh, really, in terms of din, they deserve to be destroyed. There wasn't an issue of, there was no tzaddikim there. They deserve to be destroyed. And in fact, as far as the Yonah was concerned, I did one time explain, that's a very controversial issue as to why he resisted. You see, Yonah acting completely differently than Avraham. Not just that he didn't pray for them, but to the contrary, he sought to escape. He didn't want to go there. So they bring that, that's a big question. He's a Navi, and he's a topic. I mean, where's the Avos Avriyos? But didn't he want to save them? To give them a chance to do tshuva. So they give all kinds of reasons, and they're very difficult reasons. I mean, the basic reasons that are brought down, and if you're familiar with it, is that some say because he knew that that they were destined in the future to be the enemy, to afflict Paul Yisrael. So he preferred that they would die now. He didn't want to say that. Or others say that if they would do tshuva, it would contrast with the Jews. The Jews were sinning at that time, so it would make the Jews look bad. Something along those lines. But these answers are not that easy to understand. They're not that satisfying. Because if you love truth and you love mishpat, if they do tshuva, they should be saved. What's the difference?
Plus, whatever personal ideas you have, God told them to do it.
Yeah, of course God tells him to do it. That's true.
Careful.
You're asking a different question. That question you can ask with no matter what. What's the difference, what your reasons are. If God told you to do it, it's got to be right, and therefore you should do it. Now, the answer to that question is that a Navi really can't carry out a mission unless he understands it. That's
not
the
deal.
You
ask God what to do. You don't turn around and run away.
No,
Moshe did talk to God for 7 days.
He decided he couldn't deal with it. He couldn't handle this Nevuah. He had a tremendous dilemma. Because that's the principle. He can't just go ahead and do something that he doesn't understand. Yeah,
then you have to ask God about it. Then you have to ask God about it.
Well, whatever. We're not studying Yonah right now. Take a general answer. The fact of the matter is that this perplexed him and he couldn't deal with it. So he disqualified himself. So you have to see. I mean, it's like not really, he didn't have the full Nevuah at that point. He wanted to escape from the Nevuah. He sort of sensed, or he hadn't. However, it worked out. He sort of had an impending understanding, and he didn't want to have to deal with it because he couldn't understand it. So he left, and they say the reason why he left was because he shouldn't have Nevuah. That's not what we're talking about right now. Ray Tate offered a very interesting idea, though, and he said that the wickedness of Ninveh was so great that he maintained that if they were to tshuva and they'd be saved, it would just be demoralizing to the entire world. Because the world wouldn't understand that. That is to say, you see that sometimes it's a very wicked society, and it seems like they're getting away with it. Like the Germans, Nazis, etc. Right, the Germans were defeated, but they really didn't suffer the tremendous type of punishment that you'd expect. So, in a case like that, where people can't understand it, sometimes you have a degree of evil where, let's assume the Nazis now. You just focus on the Nazis. After that degree of evil, the genocide, the ultimate destruction, so nobody has any sympathy for them. They have to be destroyed. Now, let's say, theoretically, that a Navi went to them and they did Jews. And they were spared. So this would demoralize all tradition, because you can't understand that. I mean, you don't see the tshuva, or it's phony. That's what happens whenever you're like in the justice system. You guys commit the worst of the crimes, and they get these lawyers, and they get off the hook. It demoralizes everybody. Fine pay. So that type of a phenomenon, that he was troubled by that. Of course, that's why he takes explanation. That he couldn't understand that, and he held that this would be bad for the world. But terrible. Obviously, God knows. It wasn't saying that he knows more than God. It's just that he couldn't handle that. In his framework, he couldn't do it. But this would be the point, I believe, that David is making, that the case of Nineveh is different. The case of Nineveh was to the contrary, where they had reached their full measure of Risha. That was a thoroughly going, completely corrupt. So therefore, they would destined, in terms of mitzvah, they deserve to be destroyed. Well, we don't know the reason, but God wanted to give them a chance to be tshuva, for whatever reason. But the only way that they could be saved was by, this is like the last thing, if they all did tshuva gemura, that's why everybody, because it reflected the entire society, so then they could be saved. But it wasn't any longer an argument about a society. Abraham comes into the picture with some, so to speak, before the Gemara Din. And he's arguing before the Gemara Din. It's like a Maso Matan kind of situation. It's deliberation. And he's giving forth his arguments, and you see they were good arguments, because God accepted them. The only thing is that you didn't have 10 tzaddikim. Maybe you had 9, maybe you had 8, but you didn't have, it doesn't tell us that. You didn't have 10. So once that's the case, there was a decree of destruction, and if there was tzaddikim, so they'd be destroyed. Except Lot found for God remembered Lot. Lot was saved because of a special hashkach. So that's the difference between the two cases. All right, yes, Tom. Good question. Fellas?
Yeah.
All right, any further points before we sign off?
No.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
All right,
good job, guys.